Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to the How We Scaled show. My name is Jeff Brandeis, president and founder of CEO of Brandeis Coaching and Brandeis Training Solutions. Each of our episodes will feature a CEO, VP of sales, or an entrepreneur that has scaled their business to six, seven, even eight figures. And on the show, we will ask questions to them about what they did that scaled their business, that grew their revenues, that made them what they are today. So you're ready to listen and learn? Stay tuned. One, two, and three. Here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast episode with How We Scaled. This is Jeff Brandeis, and with me today, we have Kiesan Patel. Kiesan is the CEO and founder of MNA Science, also known as Deal Room. Kiesan, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do, about your company, and what your focus is?
Sure. I'm CEO of a company called MNA Science. We do a variety of things M&A. We have about four or five different business lines that all fall in the themes of education or technology. But I'd say our core business is working with corporations, billion plus market cap, helping them with an end-to-end technology platform so they can manage their acquisitions, be more efficient, and deliver better results.
What got you into doing mergers and acquisitions? Just curiosity from your background.
I did. I got into an advisory role. I actually failed at a residential real estate and wound up in a little boutique M&A shop that was just starting up, which got me introduced to the industry. Did that for a year. Found some success there. Went off on my own. Built a practice up over about a decade till the recession happened, and was really interested in the technology space. Started getting involved with a tech startup there. It didn't pan out the way I wanted it to, but it exposed me to a lot of interesting things in the industry, particularly the way software engineers were using these project management tools to manage M&A. Wound up making a full circle back and building a project management product for managing mergers and acquisitions that we kicked off as Deal Room back in 2012.
Gotcha. Very interesting. So do you work with primarily the acquiring company or the acquiree? Do you have a flavor of which one you prefer working with?
I personally prefer working on the buy side. That's even my practice before. I preferred working with the buy side and the advisory component. We do both. We'll work with a lot of investment banks that'll run sell processes. And some of our more active clients will do both. They'll sell business lines and acquire business lines as well.
But how do you kind of go after or target the ones that you, companies you want to acquire, or the bigger companies are looking for certain acquisition targets? How does that work? If I'm an entrepreneur, I got a small business, you know, is this something I can approach you with, or, you know, they typically approach small companies with? How does that process work?
Yeah, I mean, these larger strategics will have a pretty defined strategy. And they will often have a group or team called corporate development that's responsible for the inorganic growth activities, which M&A typically falls under their scope. And they'll leverage M&A as a tool against their strategy. So whether it's growing for market share, adding new capabilities, those are those strategies that'll drive them to start looking at different businesses. The team themselves might do it directly, but a lot of times they're using in-house resources. So like in tech company, product managers are typically the ones that would have the most exposure to, here's companies that would fit really well to help us accelerate our roadmap or achieve our strategy.
Right. Gotcha. So name of my podcast is How We Scaled. So when you look back over the past 5 years or 10 years, Kiesan, to where you are today, what did you do that helped you grow your organization, grow your company, that our listeners or my listeners can really learn and go, hey, that's a pretty good idea?
Yeah, I think to stop trying to be smart and just be really dumb about everything was probably the best thing we did. You tend to get caught up in your own ideas, and a lot of it's based off of assumptions. And I think for the very beginning, we took a product out and we rushed to build, ran it for about a year, and it failed. It originally was a marketplace type of model. And we sort of veered off from the original idea, thinking that, hey, you should start building this functionality first and get to the first touch point of transactions. We went back, taking the hard lesson, and just was dumb about it. Go to do your research, assume what you know is wrong or you don't know anything, and be as unbiased as possible when you talk to these cohorts of potential customers. And really, really understand the pain points and problems that they encounter. Can you validate first and foremost that you're solving a problem that's worth solving? I think that's the big thing I see often getting skipped when I talk to other new entrepreneurs, but really emphasizing that. And I mean, doing a series of interviews, whether it's 30, 40 interviews, and start identifying where the patterns are, get that real validation. It'll help in so many different ways. It'll help you really understand your customer, the way they think about their problems. It'll help you with the language. You can even articulate their problems in their own words. I think that same feedback loop continues to apply as you start thinking of potential solutions. Maybe you're building a software or even hardware, but you start modeling out a prototype and continue getting that feedback so that you can iterate on it. And then when you think about the real components of scaling, your go-to-market, same thing. Validate another thing that we skipped over and started copying what the incumbents were doing, which was a terrible idea. They were much more mature, operating at a much, much larger balance sheet. So they had a high comp that they paid out to sales rep with virtually unlimited expense cards. We couldn't compete against that. We needed to be more creative and find better ways, which evolved into content. I think one of the things that really helped us scale, even in those early days, our space in finance is expensive for the cost per click. So we rolled that out. We were bootstrapped. We didn't raise a bunch of money. We're like, we can't just throw a bunch of money in ads. That's not going to make sense. A friend of mine suggested getting in podcasting about 5 years ago. And at the time too, one of the things that was top of mind was our industry had this underpinning problem of how siloed it was, which meant it lacked a lot of best practices. There was no standardization in terms of the way you do M&A. So when we worked with new customers, they always had a different way of thinking about it. So the idea was, well, why don't we do both? Why don't we leverage a podcast, but leverage as a platform to enable practitioners to be able to share lessons learned so we can identify patterns and look for what's actually proven in the industry. And that turned into a whole series of content where to date we have over 350 published blog posts, ebooks, two published books. One of them is a book we published as a framework to manage M&A based on case studies with Google and Atlassian. But looking at our growth, we have so much organic traffic that comes into our website for all these resources that we provide that it allows us to get so much exposure. What's interesting is the podcast itself grew into its own business line. It became a full digital media business where the book sales are there. We do events, we do roundtable events, we own and operate an online academy program. And that same approach of, can you keep an ear to the market, can you continually get feedback, understand problems, and as we identify new problems, okay, we may create a new business line around that.
That's really cool. That's interesting. So it's really having multiple facets to be able to drive the business into the real business, so to speak. So it's picking up multiple revenue streams as well, conceivably too.
But the same thing is that the feedback, we understand problems, find new problems. It's being dumb. Like if you look at anything that we've created today, Jeff, I don't think 1% of it I've contributed to that are my original ideas. In fact, I think the team knows better when I suggest a feature idea. They're like, I remember at one point my VP of engineering told me, I don't know if he's trying to be as polite or as direct as possible at the same time, but he's like, Kisan, we want to build things that people will use. So that was it. Just one line.
Yeah. I think what the things you talked about was asking questions, understanding your clients, being able to solve a problem quite candidly is I almost hate to put it this way, it's somewhat of sales 101, but it's so, it's a trait that I don't see very often in, you know, when I'm being sold to. It's just like, okay, here's my product, this is what we do. And, you know, people don't take enough time to really understand what's going on in my world. And, you know, they just want to, you know, sell you their product and, you know, and move along. So it's interesting. From a niche perspective, Keeson, do you actually focus on certain type of industries or companies?
We don't focus on specific industries. I think we see a lot of commonalities when it comes to M&A of size. I would say if we do have like a definition of an ICP, it would be billion plus market cap companies that do three or more acquisitions a year, or private equity backed roll-ups that they're consolidating an industry through a high volume of acquisitions. Those tend to be our sweet spots that we do well in. And it gets easy to get tempted to go broaden your scope and go after a lot of other segments. Right. But we're really trying to focus in those areas and just have a lot of room to grow at the current time.
That's awesome. So one of the things I always like to talk to my my folks about is, when I interview them, is the culture that you bring as a leader to your organization. Can you help describe what you do and how you build it and how you get the team working as a unit?
Yeah, I think it's two parts. It's kind of understanding your personal values and then understanding the type of work environment you're creating. With the work environment, the factors that create a positive work environment is one where everybody has a voice that's heard. I think you have to create a communication framework where everyone truly feels their voice is being heard. A lot of examples where the most junior developer was comfortable sharing an idea and it became one of the leading features in the product. To the other side as well, understanding where the cracks are coming about in the company so that we can fix them before they blow through the floor. Really important to have that framework of communication. The other is acknowledging achievements. A lot more value than just the compensation. People want to feel they're contributing something and their work is being valued. So really taking the time to acknowledge those achievements, and if you can even do it across the company. So the sales team's acknowledging when engineers have created some new functionality and vice versa, they're acknowledging when we've won new logos. I think that's a big part of the creating a happy work environment, and then creating a work environment where you feel you work amongst friends. That it's not just work. If you can find ways to bond, to connect, I know it gets a little more challenging with our virtual environment. So sometimes we try to do the fly-ins where we can, but even with a distributed team across different countries, just to create some light elements into your conversations and, you know, bring in the, hey, what'd you do over the weekend? Well, that was fun. Or just try to get some little events around that to socialize. I think those are the components that we acknowledge that creates a positive work environment. Then when you want to define it further with culture, a lot of it does stem from leadership. My personal values, I always build and extend off of, come as discipline, learning pattern, and empathy. And then when we look at even the broader definition, working with the management team into those values, a lot of those reflect, I think they expanded it to five different areas. Detail-oriented is probably the one they added, which I'm not the strongest at. But when I look at like discipline, it's this ability to get comfortable doing the uncomfortable. That's the real thing. Can you get objective about the goals that you're trying to set from the time you wake up? It's time to play the game, push yourself forward. You know, and when you look at the company values, they use the word resilience, which is essentially the crux of our existence. So we went through a lot of ups and downs, and what that means when we transpose that into the broader company value is everybody takes accountability of their goals. That we don't have this top-down management approach. It's very much like bottoms up. But when we commit to our goals, everybody's got to do their part to take ownership of it. I think learning a pattern is the other one, that we need to learn things to achieve and do it as quickly as possible. But it's a pattern. It's not just one channel, that you need to look at how you learn on different subjects, whether it's through your online resources, through books, and then also from subject matter experts. But building that as a combination to be really resourceful, to learn as a subject matter expert. And that's like part of being adaptive as well, to learn those things quickly. Then empathy is a big one that we really emphasize. A lot of times we enter conversations, we have our agendas, things that we want to get out, and you need to put that to the side. This goes back to being dumb. Can we forget what we know, get to this mindset where you know nothing? Because sometimes we do. We get in a conversation, right. We might talk about M&A, Jeff, and I might feel I'm the subject matter expert and want to tell you all this stuff about M&A. But if I can put all that to the side, I'm probably going to learn a thing about M&A from you. So that's the first step. And then to be able to, from there, understand what the person's thinking, how they feel, why do they feel that way. When you can understand a person's goals and challenges and align yourself to help them achieve the things they're looking to achieve, that's when you really make progress. And people tend to reciprocate. They open up to your ideas and the ways they can help you in return.
That was just awesome. I mean, there's so many different points I would love to have more details on. It brings back a memory of mine when I was in the corporate world. We had the Blue Angels actually come and do a presentation. And the culture that you're describing is one that they kind of termed as nameless, rankless communication. So at the end, after each of their missions, and they're flying around, obviously fairly fast up in the sky, and they get really close, they do a debrief. And it's kind of what you were just talking about, is forget I'm the captain, forget, maybe I might be my first flight, but if I do something wrong, I mean, that's life or death up there. So you need to tell me, forget the titles, which is really what some of the things that you were talking about. And just let's just have an open, honest communication rapport between employees and the leaders. And I think that's just a great culture, for any of the entrepreneurs or anyone that's listening to the podcast to develop within their organization and their company. So I just love that. It's fantastic. So give me an idea and a little bit about your leadership style. You talked about it a little bit earlier. But, what do you love most about being the leader and the CEO?
You always got to change. You always got different challenges every day. No days look alike. I think it's an opportunity to create. That's probably, there's different types of CEOs. There's definitely more of like sales type, engineering type, and just type A. Right. But for me, I love building. So just to get this early start ideas and working on them from the very beginning. I think the thing I've appreciated over time is you got to build a great team. Like that's a really key part that I probably struggled with in the beginning. Didn't realize like how hard it actually is to hire the right people. But when you do and you have the opportunity to really, really build a great team, that's just a rewarding thing in itself to be able to wake up every day and just be excited for the team that you're working with.
So true. It's really as your team goes, we see it in business, you see it in sports, you see wherever you go, it becomes, there's no I, in the team. You need that team to work together in order to win at the end of the day. So that's great.
I think the thing when you get a team that challenges you, if you can create a culture where people are comfortable criticizing you as a leader, that's when you've achieved something great. And that's not only good for you as a leader to have somebody help you identify your blind spots, but it enables you to continuously learn. Like you got to be pushing yourself to know these areas that you can keep learning and advancing your skills.
That's, that's also a great point, Keeson, is to realize you as a leader, and I don't mean this negatively, you don't always know everything. And you should be, every leader, we're always open to learning new things. Everyone has new ideas. And just because you are the CEO and I don't mean this disrespectful, it doesn't have to be your way. Sometimes somebody might have a little better idea. So stay open-minded to suggestions and continue to learn, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to make you a better person.
I totally agree. If you can get people comfortable to voice those things, it helps a lot. And you might not agree, but even if you have a culture like a Jeff Bezos, if you can disagree and commit, that's also a very powerful thing, and it's fine. Like I encourage people to prove me wrong. That's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you're very unique then. That's great. So what you see as your biggest opportunities moving forward, and conceivably what your biggest threat is within the industry?
The biggest opportunity is scaling. I think we're on that path. We're getting ready. We still have some growth to do before we can truly move into scale mode. But that's the thing. I think we're, about two-thirds of the way there. And we'll get there in the next year or two. And then we'll really shift at scaling. And that's the massive opportunity to take what we've developed in terms of capabilities and being able to make an impact in the industry at scale. The greatest threat, I think, just being stagnant, just not keeping up, not continuously pushing ourselves to improve, not being disciplined about what we're trying to achieve and the talent that we're going to need to achieve those things. So I think just continuously learning and being disciplined are the key elements that could also pose as a threat.
I truly love your culture. I love your thoughts. And I just truly enjoy our conversation today. So, Kiesen, if our listeners wanted to find you and learn more about Deal Room, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Sure. If anybody's interested in learning about M&A, our website, mascience.com, has tons of free resources. Myself, I'm primarily on LinkedIn, just Kiesen, K-I-S-O-N, Patel.
Thank you so much for joining our podcast today, Kiesen. Again, everyone, thank you so much for listening. I'm Jeff Brandeis, bringing you another episode of How We Scaled. Thank you, Kiesen, once again for joining us today. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. I truly hope everyone enjoyed the podcast here and our special guest. I know each of you are really excited to possibly even be a guest on our podcast. So feel free to fill out the application form that's below. We'll follow back up with you, be in touch with you, and it'd be great to have you. In addition, I know I'll be reaching out to you to see how we might be able to even do some business and have a conversation about working together. Again, thank you so much for joining our podcast. And if you do know of someone else that actually would like to be on the podcast, feel free to recommend him or her to also fill out the application below. Again, thank you so much for joining. Have a great day and see you next week on How We Scale.